Hello, everyone, and welcome to minute 83 of season 10 of Movie Minute the Daily Podcast, where we hijack our way through the 1974 action thriller, The Taking of Pelham 123, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Andy Golden of Blueprint Review. Welcome back to the show, Andy.
Thank you very much. Good to be back.
Yes. Yes. I'm glad that you were able to get your peeing out of the way.
Yeah, even great, man.
Yes, just don't fall off the train. So minute 83 begins with Brown closing the door and ends with Gray getting ready for action. So we ended things yesterday with the hijackers getting off the train, and Blue Robert Shaw basically threatens the rest of the passengers, and this minute opens up with Brown then just closing the door on them, which is interesting the way that they do this whole thing. And then I like how after that happens, so what it is that they're supposed to be doing at this point, you know, like they're not used to the fact that they've yeah. now been given free rein from this whole thing. The debate is interesting to watch due to the fact that you know, we've sort of gotten to know some of these characters, so we can see what's going on. You know, we first hear you know, the yuppie go, "Now what?" And then the old Jewish guy goes, "Me are asking? Now, why does he think he's talking to him?"
That's a good point, yeah.
You know, they're having this group discussion. He is sitting across from him. I guess you know,
he's being addressed as part of the group, I suppose, you could say.
I don't know. I don't know. That's just you know, talk about ego. You know, obviously, they must be talking to him. So, who knows? And, you know, then the shot goes outside and we see Green, Martin Balsam, start tinkering with something. And then the train starts to roll and starts moving along. And we get the typical... you know, grinding of the metal and then the rattling of the train. And things just start moving.
One thing that occurred to me this time around is early on in the film, when the first hostage is killed, Green says, I thought you said no one was going to get hurt. He obviously was under the impression no one was going to get hurt. But then... he's instrumental in this part of the plan. So he must know that he's putting people at pretty serious risk of getting hurt with what he's doing with the train.
No, but they can look at it from the perspective that, okay, we're going to let the train keep going and it's going to, you know, eventually hit a red light, but it'll be really far. You know, he's not looking at it that they're going to injure them. He's looking at them as a distraction. So yeah, I wouldn't necessarily say I even believe that Blue doesn't think he's going to injure anyone. I think he just, you know, his idea, Robert Shaw, his idea is that to put a lot of distance between them and the train so that everyone will be looking at the train and not looking for them.
Yeah.
You know,
it's just the amount of speed it picks up, it's still putting them at fairly serious risk of injury. But I guess there's they have to have some kind of a they can't really do anything else, can they? it's not the same as being gunned down, obviously.
No. Yeah, I wouldn't compare those two. Slightly different. Slightly. Just a little bit. And then the four hijackers are all crouching on the side as the train moves along. It's interesting that they're crouching, maybe because they don't want the passengers to see them there. Because I mean, they're not concerned of closed caption TV or anything like that at this point. So yeah, I don't know why they're crouching down. And then at this point, Blue then says to them, "All right, come on." And they get up and start walking towards the back where Gray is sitting. We'll find out later that he's sitting at at a flight of stairs. To be able to go up onto the street itself. And then we're back in the train, and we see the hippie looking back and forth. He's got this nicely colored scarf on, which is interesting. It definitely clashes with what he's wearing, but why not? He must have gotten that as a present from someone. And then we see him reach down to his ankle, and he pulls out a gun. And everyone is completely shocked. Even even the viewers for the first time are shocked that this guy And then someone screams to him and goes, "Hey, where are you going?" Which is a very strange thing that for someone to ask him. He just pulled out a gun and just running towards
the
back of the train.
He's probably asking, "Why are you getting up when we've been told not to? Because you're putting us all in danger."
Maybe. That could be. Could be. And then he feels the need to identify himself, and he goes, "I'm a police officer." And he, quickly opens the door and jumps out of the plane. He quickly opens the door and jumps out of the train from the back. And, nobody makes a fuss of it. All right, one less hostage. Not a big deal. I guess once they hear that he's a police officer, maybe they're just okay with him jumping off the train.
Do you think it's... Is it too early for him to have done that? Because does it seem like a bit hasty to be following so soon? Or
no, I don't think so, because I think he's looking at it from the perspective that he wants to be the closest distance that he can be from the hijackers, and also he doesn't know how fast the train is going to be going. So for him to jump off the train, even 30 sure, seconds later, they could.
It's
be
just that he comes so close to getting caught, doesn't he? But
yeah, but we also see that fall is not an easy fall for him. It looks like he's injured, just from jumping off a slow moving train. We're not even talking about a fast moving train. And when he hits the ground, you can even hear the what sounds like bone crunching, type of thing. The sound is just amazing in that, throughout the whole movie. But in that scene is great also. It's nice that they finally reveal to anyone watching this for the first time who's the cop who's been sitting around, biding their time, because, on the one hand, he doesn't want to have to take on four hijackers, but now he's jumping off the train to go take on four hijackers. So, maybe it's the idea that he doesn't have to worry about
the civilians. Can you remember when you first watched it? Did you have any theories about who the cop was going to be?
I can't remember that far back. The first time I saw this was over 40 years ago.
I think I said when I was on last time, for a while I thought it was going to be the passed out alcoholic woman. I thought she was just faking it. Yeah.
It would have been
maybe
a nice
maybe it's a little bit too much. No question.
Yeah, maybe. But now, I think if this movie would have been made today, they would have
maybe,
they would have made the drunk woman the cop. But I like the surprise that it's the hippie.
No, and I
Because you don't
suppose
expect it to be
back in
someone
that
like
era, the juxtaposition of a hippie and a cop was quite a powerful symbol.
And so he reaches down, he had reached down to pull out his gun from his ankle holster. So let's talk about ankle holsters a little bit. How you just, well, that's the
I
idea,
didn't
isn't
see
it?
that
Isn't the phrase smoke and mirrors,
one
I don't want you to always know what I want to talk about.
coming.
When do you think the whole idea of having a ankle holster goes back?
Course, that's right. Well, presumably they've always been used for guns, so I know it's not ancient Egypt.
It is not. I will give you
Ankhurst.
that.
I'm going to say they came in the 1940s.
Okay. No, it goes back to the Old West.
Okay.
The idea that people would hide a spare gun, like
Oh,
a
yeah.
small spare gun in their boots.
I should have thought of that. Guns immediately. I should have thought of the Old West.
And the idea of walking around with a concealed weapon in your ankle on an ankle holster caused a lot of problems because people generally associated having a hidden gun with criminals and stuff like that. So there were a lot of bans even in the early 1800s in the US for people not being able to walk around with concealed weapons. But the idea of policemen using ankle holsters started in around the 1950s,
Okay.
where they would have detectives and regular policemen would want to have a backup gun. And they would have it in an ankle holster, keep them as accessible and as secretive as possible, I guess you could say.
I wonder what the first film to show a cop with an ankle holster was. That'd be interesting to know. I'm sure.
Good luck trying to figure that one out.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm sure it'll be impossible to track down.
And the idea that in many movies and TV shows and stuff like that, they constantly would have characters, whether it's good guys or bad guys, hiding guns in ankle holsters, it helped make ankle holsters more popular. So it's the idea of the chicken and the egg type of thing. What came
Yeah.
first? People watching movies with people with ankle holsters, or people going out and creating their own. So, yeah, that's the idea of an ankle holster. And at this point, we're back outside of the train, and Brown then goes, "Hey, Mr. Blue, Robert Shaw." And he responds, "Yeah, what do you want?" He goes, "I thought I saw something," and then he starts stuttering and says, "Fall off the back of the train." And then Blue, Robert Shaw, then says to him, "What do you mean something?" He goes, "It must have been a person. Might have been a person. But I ain't 100% sure." And he goes, "All right." Gray then is feeling the adrenaline. He goes, "All right, let's go make sure." Now he's all gung ho about doing these things. Beforehand, he either wanted to harass some of the hostages either physically or sexually, and
Yeah.
that's the extent of what we know about what's his name, Joe is a really funny the character has a very funny nickname. It's like Joe Smile or something like that. I'm trying to remember what the
I can't remember.
Oh. Yeah, because I mean we only find out in a few weeks about.
Yeah.
Yeah, can't remember it right now. Joe Welcome. Joe Welcome. That was his name.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Joe Welcome. Yeah, I like the fact that it's Brown who is the one who sees something fall off the back of the train, because it's, Blue, Robert Shaw, doesn't hesitate to believe him.
Yeah.
I think if it would have come from Gray, he might not have believed him. Gray would have still gone. But the idea is being able to, give us a character who is sitting on the fence. We don't really know enough about Brown.
No.
But Blue seems to trust him. And that's the important thing. Which is very weird about the fact that, on the one hand, Blue is very curious and wants to make sure that everything is safe. But he's not gung-ho in order to try to go and figure it out. So
yeah, I think he's so he has a dedication to the schedule, doesn't he, Blue? So
exactly. Well,
he doesn't like interruption.
Right. We'll talk about it tomorrow with when he responds
to the whole thing. Yeah, sure.
But yeah, it's we'll leave people to ponder that idea.
Yeah.
Because maybe it's something we'll talk more about. Maybe. Who knows? at this point, Green doesn't know what to think at this point either. He's completely out of this whole discussion or argument or debate, however you want to look at it. So I like that they're adding a little bit of conflict and confusion among the hijackers, since they feel that they've now, done beautifully and are able to completely dupe everyone else. So, yeah, I like the way that they do that.
Yeah.
All right. Did you have anything else you wanted to add about this particular minute?
I don't think so. The only other thing that occurred to me, it's all the talk about peeing. It just made me wonder how many of these hostages by this point are really desperate for a pee. must be quite a few of them.
Okay, again, it's only been an hour and a half. Again, I'm not saying it's impossible that someone's going to feel that they need to take a pee after an hour and a half. That goes without saying. But we're not talking about, they're not there for days or anything like that.
No. I mean, I was just wondering about it. It doesn't affect the plot, right? Because no one's going to speak up even if they do need to be.
Yeah. I mean, again, part of the whole thing also is, like, nowadays, I think trains are equipped with toilets, like you have in the back of a bus or something like that.
Yeah.
So.
Although I think I would be reluctant to ask the men wielding the guns if I could go and use the toilet. I think I would just hold it.
Well, you mean you're not Holly McClain. Holly McClain made sure that. What idiot made you boss? sorry. What idiot put you in charge?
Oh yeah,
you did when you shot my boss. Yes. All right. So once again, did you have a top five that you want to?
Yes, of course. Yeah. I've got one for today. So we did the mayor yesterday. So we're going to do the mayor's wife today. I'm going to do my top five Doris Roberts films.
Mm.
Again, these are all films that I haven't seen for quite a long time. I would have given them a rewatch, but I don't have as much time to put this together. But number five,
Everybody loves Raymond. Everybody loves Raymond. I think for the final one, I'm going to put Everybody Loves Raymond.
Well, quite different from Everybody Loves Raymond, the first one. It's a film called The Honeymoon Killers. It's a long time since I've seen it. It's a bit of a 60s cult film, but I remember it being very good. Number four is a film called Hester Street, which, again, long time since I've seen it, but I remember quite enjoying it.
I've
It's
seen that. That's with
Carol
Carol Kane.
Kane.
Yes, I've seen.
Yeah, it was her Oscar nomination, Carol Kane's Oscar nomination. Number three is another sort of 70s cult film called Little Murders, which I remember specifically for Donald Sutherland's scenes in it as a vicar. He's very funny in it. It's a very strange film, but I remember enjoying it. Number two, she's in A New Leaf, so we've got that Matthau connection again. That's number two. And number one, she has a part in a film that I love. It's the original version of Neil Simon's The Heartbreak Kid, which I absolutely love that film. I haven't seen it for a long time either, but I remember it quite well. I remember absolutely loving it.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, I'm a fan of the original Heartbreak Kid. I like Jerry St I sorry, I like Ben Stiller. But
Yeah, I do as well. But I never actually watched the remake. Was it?
I've seen it.
Did the
Oh wait,
Farrelly brothers do
one second.
it?
It wasn't Paul Rudd. It was Ben Stiller, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was Ben Stiller, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I do like the twist that they added in the remake. That I do like. And some of the characters are quite memorable there too. That's actually a remake that I can tolerate.
Yeah.
Yes, it is the Farrelly brothers.
Oh, well, yeah.
And I think Malene Ackerman is great, as is Michelle Monaghan. Hey, and Jerry Stiller's in it also. There you go.
Oh, Jerry Stills in it as well. Maybe I will have to watch
Yeah,
it.
I think I'm gonna have to go rewatch that movie. Interesting. Yeah, I'll have to also look take be on the lookout for Darce Roberts along the way.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. Once again, we will play the daily game of Name That Remake. So we will spin the wheel and see if you can continue your streak. I hope you can. All right, let us spin the wheel again and see what comes up. And around and around and around the wheel goes. Okay. So the original came out in 1947, and the remake came out in 2013. Okay. Any clue yet?
No, I can't put it together from just that.
This mild-mannered guy who ends up getting caught up in a conspiracy and doesn't know if it's real or not.
Oh, that's not hard to go on.
You want to know the lead actors in both movies?
Yeah, that would help.
So the 1947 one stars Danny Kaye, and coincidentally, this was not planned, but the star of the 2013 movie is
Oh,
Ben Stiller.
yes. Yeah, I've got it. Are they both called The Secret Life of Walter Mitty?
Yes.
Yeah, I have seen both of those as well, but it's a long, long time ago.
Right. I enjoyed both of them, but I saw the original as a kid. So
Yeah.
even though the remake is quite good. I like seeing Ben Stiller in these type of roles.
Yeah. Yeah, I seem to remember quite enjoying the Ben Stiller one as well.
All right. So would you like to once again tell people where they can find Andy Goldman?
Yeah, you can find my writings about films, new releases, and various lists and rankings that I like to put together about directors and films over at Blueprint Review.
All right, and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook, find me on Twitter, find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, movieRobMinute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So, until tomorrow,
get some tights.